You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, ChristianHumanist.org.
This is the last cowboy song, the end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along, another piece of America's lost.
Once again, welcome to the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal, and I am an associate professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. You are tuning in to the third and final episode of our coverage of 1990s country music. Listen in now as I talk to Michael Farmer and Danny Anderson about women in the 1990s in country. Well, if there's arguments, and this is super mild argument between hat and non-hat country. It's if anything, it might just be a marketing gimmick. I don't even know that the distinction matters that much. One distinction that does matter is the rise of female country artists in the 90s. This is really their decade. There's certainly been great country music, female singers before this. We've talked about Dolly Parton, we've talked about Tammy Wynette and Loretta Lynn, and Tanya Tucker, and so on. But the 90s, there are more of them than at any time previous. So, Michael, can you just walk us through some of the women in the 90s?
Absolutely. And yeah, as you say, this was a big decade for women, and they haven't really had a big decade since then. We'll talk about it next time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But women don't get played on country radio much anymore, which is weird because in the 90s, I feel like they really ruled country radio. And largely they were responsible for pushing country further into pop, I think is probably safe to say.
Right.
And probably the foremost example of that is Faith Hill, who we talked about briefly as a beautiful woman. She had a lot of pop crossover hits right at the turn of the 21st century. And the one I'm thinking of, we mentioned earlier, This Kiss.
I don't need another turn to cry, no. I don't want to learn the hard way, baby, hello, oh no, goodbye. But you got me like a rocket, shooting straight across the sky. It's the way you love me, it's a feeling like this. It's centrifugal motion, it's perpetual bliss. It's that pivotal moment, it's impossible.
Which is so uncountry as to basically just be a pop song. And a lot of her material is like that. She had a song called Breathe.
I can feel the magic floating in the air. Being with you gets me that way. I watch the sunlight dance across your face, and I've never been this swept away. All my thoughts just seem to settle on the breeze when I'm lying wrapped up in your arms. The whole world just fades away, and the only thing I hear is the beating of your heart. And I can feel you breathe, it's watching over me. And suddenly I'm melting into you. There's nothing left to prove, and baby, all we need is just to be caught up in the touch, the slow and steady rush. Baby, isn't that the way that love's supposed to be?
which was from about that same time. And they're both great songs, but they're not recognizably country songs, and that's interesting to me because she was a huge country star playing music that was largely not recognizably country music. And in that category, you could also put Shania Twain, who had some really monster hit singles, including Man, I Feel Like a Woman. You guys know that one, I'm sure.
Let's go, girls.
That's one of the great, that's one of the best songs ever written, but it's not a country song, right? And she kind of pushes it to its logical conclusion by releasing one album as a country music version and as a pop music version. So her fans would have to buy both albums to get both sounds, but it's the same songs, one set recorded with country music instrumentation and one set recorded with non-country music instrumentation. And never having bought a Shania Twain album, I don't know if the vocals are the same and they just change the instrumentation underneath it. Do you guys know? Did you buy those records?
No.
I wasn't much of a Shania Twain fan, so I know.
Right, and I don't know a lot of people who were, even though she was a huge star, right? I mean, she was as big as female country music gets in the 90s, and yet I don't know anyone who's like, oh, I love Shania Twain.
I knew a lot of girls who liked her, and I knew a lot of guys who liked to go to her concerts.
Well, the line I remember somebody in my middle school saying was, my girlfriend's got the CD and I've got the cover.
Yeah, it's like she's really like the Farrah Fawcett poster of the 90s, kind of, in a lot of ways.
But Man, I Feel Like a Woman is a fantastic pop song. Like, I love that song and always have.
Oh, see, I think that's another of those just terrible, terrible songs. But I don't feel like a woman, so that may be why.
Maybe that's your problem, boy.
I could very well be.
What is the best thing about being a woman? Well, it's the prerogative to have a little fun. Somebody wrote that lyric. Somebody thought that out and wrote it down, and she sang it and recorded it and made $1 billion off of it. So, who's the joke on, Coyle? Me or you?
You know, I don't know. I will say her biography is actually pretty incredible, though.
Yeah, it is. She went through a lot.
Yeah.
She grew up quite poor, right? And her parents died. Is that right? Was she an orphan and she like took care of her younger siblings?
Yeah, she was 16 or 17, and she took care of all of her siblings after her parents were killed in the car wreck, I think. Basically, single-handedly raised a family as a teenager, not by any choice of her own.
Yeah, and seemed to come out of it relatively normal. Although something was wrong in her that made her want to marry Mutt Lange.
I missed that one.
Oh, really? Yeah. Mutt Lange, best known as AC/DC's producer in the early 80s. He also produced most of her albums in the 90s, and they were married. And then he cheated on her with her best friend. And they're not married anymore, and he doesn't produce her music anymore.
Sure.
Jeez.
Crazy, huh? So to return briefly to Faith Hill, there was this kind of mild feminism going on in female country music in the mid-90s, a kind of girl power thing. And she had a song called Oh, shoot. I've completely lost the name of the song. The Wild One, is that her?
Yeah, Wild One.
Wild One, yeah.
They said change your clothes. She said no, I won't. They said comb your hair. She said some kids don't. And her parents' dreams went up in smoke. They said you can't leave, she said yes I will. They said don't see him, she said his name is Bill. She's on a roll and it's all uphill. She's a wild one with an angel's face. She's a woman child in a state of grace. When she was 3 years old on her daddy's knee, he said you can be anything you wanna be. She's a wild one. Satan's tongue. She thinks they're too old. They think she's too young. The battle lines are clearly drawn. She's a wild one with an angel's face. She's a woman child in a state of grace. When she was 3 years old on her daddy's knee, he said you can be anything you want to be. She's a wild one.
So she did that, and Trisha Yearwood, now best known as Garth Brooks' wife and the maker of a truly nauseous cookbook, did a song called "She's in Love with the Boy," which are very similar songs, and they're both kind of about rebellious teenage girls getting one over on their parents.
Katie's sitting on a row front porch, watching the chickens peck the ground. There ain't a whole lot going on tonight in this one horse town. Over yonder, coming up the road in a beat up Chevy truck, her boyfriend Tommy is laying on the horn, splashing through the mud and the muck. Her daddy says he ain't worth a lick. When it comes to brains, he got the short end of the stick. But Katie's young and man, she just don't care. She'd follow Tommy anywhere. She's in love with the boy. She's in love with the boy. She's in love with the boy. And even if they have to run away, she's gonna
And they're both really good songs. And then Winona Judd, who we talked about briefly in the context of The Judds, did a song called Girls with Guitars.
She turned 15 with great expectations. Before her brother knew something was up, he caught her going through his record collection. Looking at Hendrix like a lovesick pup. She begged and she pleaded to dad, finally listen. He drove her in the car down the Sears Roebuck. He bought her that guitar and that was the beginning. Now she's down in the cellar with the amp turned up. Girls with guitar.
Daddy's little angel.
Girls with guitar.
What's in her coming to?
Girls with guitar.
Mother's tender word.
Saturday night, she followed her brother in her socks and stockings on the old gym floor. While everybody thinks two garage band covers, she was checking out ribs and memorizing chords. She didn't care at all for the football feelings. She didn't even notice the basketball stars. Boys as a species were all a bunch of zeros, except for the ones that played that guitar.
which I think is also very, very in that vein. So there's a very mild feminist uprising going on country music radio in the 90s. And those three artists are all pretty big. I mean, Faith Hill's huge. Trisha Yearwood's really big for country radio. She never quite crossed over. And Winona Judd, although we forget it today because she hasn't had much staying power, had, you know, giant number one singles, more than one of them, I believe. She was much more successful as a solo artist than she was as a member of the Judds. And I think of her in some ways as doing a lot of what Travis Tritt was doing, but in a more female register. She kind of did a Southern rock, country rock type of thing that nevertheless found a home on country radio.
And she's interesting too, because that era of Winona, especially, I mean, she's had a big following in the gay community. And that's like, I think a really interesting crossover for country music in general. And I mean, in a lot of ways, like, I guess like people like Dolly Parton always have too, right? And
is there a bigger gay icon than Dolly Parton?
Yeah. And so, I think, Winona Judd had a really interesting, I don't know, crossover appeal because of the maybe it's the style, the kind of rock anthem sort of style.
Well, and I think also she, like Dolly, takes a version of femininity and kind of pushes it as far as it'll go. And I think there's something campy about her, is what I'm saying. The LGBT community has a long, well documented history with camp, right?
Yeah.
Cole, you've got Mary Chapin Carpenter on here, which, you know, Mary Chapin Carpenter is one of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time. But I think she really, despite the era she's performing in, really belongs more with Katie Lang and Lyle Lovett than she does with these folks, just because of what she's doing is much more classic 1970s singer-songwriters. Than anything approaching contemporary country music. What was her big hit? Shut Up and Kiss Me? That was her. That was her big hit from the 90s.
Shut Up and Kiss Me. Down at the Twist and Shout. He thinks he'll keep her. She was one of those performers who was pretty solid, like pretty consistent in what she released. Not a lot of flops on her.
Right.
I'm trying to think. What was the one?
Passionate Kisses.
Passionate.
There
kisses.
We go.
But that's a Lucinda Williams track. Mm. She didn't write that one. This shirt is the one I always think of.
This shirt is old and faded, all the colors washed away. I've had it now for more damn years than I could count anyway. I wear it beneath my jacket with the collar turned up high. So old I should replace it, but I'm not about to try. This shirt's got silver buttons and a place upon the sleeve where I used to set my heart up, right there where anyone could see. This shirt is the one I wore to every boring high school dance, where the boys ignored the girls and we all pretended to like the band. This shirt This shirt was a pillow for my head on a train through Italy. This shirt was a blanket beneath the love we made in Algerland. This shirt was lost for 3 whole days in a town near Buffalo, till I found the locker key in a downtown Trailways bus depot.
If you don't know that song, it does what country music does best, which is it tells this tiny little story based on really specific detail. I would highly recommend this shirt. I mean, Mary Chapin Carpenter, almost anything you can listen to by her is worth listening to. And in that way, I think she is not much like the other people we've been talking about who are very polished and kind of set up for radio. Mary Chapin Carpenter is something else, and she just happened to get lucky and find a big audience in the 90s. And I don't know how much that audience has stuck around with her now that she's kind of entered the Americana arena.
In some ways, it's kind of like Anne Murray in the 80s, right? She didn't sound anything like anybody else, but was very popular. And I think Mary, I mean, it's a different style. I'm not saying Anne Murray's at the level of Mary Chapin Carpenter, but they are very kind of standout artists.
Mary Chapin Carpenter, of course, not actually related to Harry Chapin, which is what everybody said in the 90s.
Oh, Mandela effect. I thought that was true. Jeez. Okay.
Nope.
And Tim McGraw is Tug McGraw's kid.
That's right. Wow. And Winona Judd, Naomi Judd's daughter, it turns out.
Ashley Judd's sister, too, right?
Yeah. Man, if you've never heard the story there's an episode of Cocaine and Rhinestones that goes through the whole history of the Judds, and you will come out feeling so sorry for Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Naomi just took Winona on tour and just left Ashley at home. Just abandoned her. Anyway, back to Mary Chapin Carpenter. She put out a song 2 years ago called Sometimes Just the Sky. That Coyle, you ought to drop in here, okay. And if not, our listeners should go listen to it. It is an amazing song and a career full of amazing songs.
My head, an endless should have rained on me like a storm, like a hurricane. Losses piled up like wood stacked stories. Feels like I've been framed. I've no alibi. Used to be that all I needed was what I didn't possess. Yearning makes you who you end up as, more or less. Whatever choice I made that worked out was just a lucky guess. Just a lucky guess.
I can't say enough good about Mary Chapin Carpenter. And then I want to end with somebody who I know we're going to end up talking about a lot more next time, which is the Dixie Chicks. And the Dixie Chicks, I think, got lumped in with the Trisha Yearwood, Faith Hill, Shania Twain crowd when they first started. But I think they're legitimate country musicians who have some crossover appeal, but who never really stopped doing country music, and we're very proud of that. They had a song, I can't remember the name of it now, but where they go through and talk how country music's not like it used to be, and they make a lot of puns on Merle Haggard and Johnny Cash. But the Dixie Chicks are really really excellent musicians and great singers as well, and it's too bad that what happened to them that we'll talk about in the next episode happened to them, because I think we probably missed out on 8 or 9 really great Dixie Chicks albums.
I mean, they have a new single out now. again, yeah. Whenever this drops, I don't know if it'll, people may know about it or may have, you know, vanished into the ether, but I keep seeing the ads for it on YouTube.
Gaslighter.
And Taylor Swift kind of resuscitated them. They sing on one of the songs on her latest album.
Right. Although in the 90s, we would have known. I don't want to jump in on you. What else do you have on the Dixie Chicks?
You're gonna talk about Wide Open Spaces, which is a great song.
I was gonna talk about Goodbye Earl.
Also a great song. In the kind of fried green tomatoes mode, if that makes sense.
Right.
They were. I mean, when that album came out, I was working in New York City, and they were on. I worked at this Barnes and Noble bookstore, and they were on our speakers all the time. Like they talk about crossover appeal. And still distinctively country. I mean, it did not sound like Shania Twain trying to cross over. I mean, they were distinctively country, but still very popular amongst the wide audience.
Yeah, they had a lot of great songs. And, you know, if our listeners don't know this story, they should Google Adam Carolla, Natalie Maines, and hear the Adam Carolla story about the Dixie Chicks, which is... really fantastic, and the joke is not on the Dixie Chicks at all. So definitely go listen to that.
Anything else about women in the 90s, Michael?
It seemed like a corner had been turned for women in country music, and it didn't happen, and that's a real shame.
Yeah, and some of that I think is probably because of what happens culturally and politically in the 90s that affects country music. But we'll get to that in a. In the next episode, in the 2000s. If I said 90s, I meant in the early 2000s. I mean, September 11th changes a lot of the tone of country music, mostly for worse, I think. But that that does tend to box a lot of the women out. Although to be fair, I think all of the women we talked about today are still performing.
Yeah, well, and Trisha Yearwood's got her cookbook.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
All right. Let's just say if she's feeding her husband from it, they're gonna have to call him Girth Brooks.
Leanne Rimes, I mean, she was sort of like a child. I mean, kind of in the whatever Tanya Tucker sort of tradition of right. like child country singers. Leanne Rimes was hit records at like 13 or 14, right? And so yeah.
Yeah, I tend to remember her mostly from her Patsy Cline covers, but yeah. I mean, she covered them incredibly well.
Yeah.
Her career just kind of evaporated, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But we wouldn't have, I mean, in the 90s, we would not have expected that to have been the case because she was the up and comer. Danny, anything you want to add to the women in the country in the 90s?
No, I think Michael, I feel like they became a bigger thing later into the decade, right? They kind of took over the charts.
I think that's accurate.
And at that point, I had kind of checked out of country music, sadly. And so I kind of missed out on that a little bit. So, but no, and I think I would say exactly, I would not add anything to what Michael said.
I would just mention Terry Clark, who I almost included under Hat Country because she is she is the one female singer that I know of who regularly wore a hat. Maybe some of the others did. I don't know. But she's the one that I picture wearing a hat. Again, just a good, solid performer, and I think she's still performing. She had a number of hits, and all of them were solid songs and worth listening to. The one that I think of when I think of Terry Clark is Better Things to Do, but there's any number of songs that you could mention.
My car in the rain, change my news.
Let's wrap up the 90s talking about that George Strait and Alan Jackson single, Murder on Music Row.
Talk about novelty songs.
Yeah.
Nobody saw him running from 16th Avenue. They never found a fingerprint or the weapon that was used. But someone killed country music, cut out its heart and soul. They got away with murder down on Music Row. The almighty dollar and the lust for worldwide fame slowly killed tradition, and for that someone should hang.
You tell them, Alan.
Well, they all say not guilty, but the evidence will show that murder was committed down on Music Row. For the steel guitars no longer cry, and fiddles barely play, but drums and rock and roll guitars are mixed up in your face.
Oh, Hank wouldn't have a chance
on today's radio, since they committed murder down on Music Row.
Is that a fair description of country music in the 90s?
I mean, Alan Jackson's got some nerve singing that, since he had a big hit with a cover of Summertime Blues by Eddie Cochran, which was a great cover, by the way. I mean, I don't want to disparage.
Baby, to try to get a date.
My boss says, no dice, son, you gotta work late.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, cause there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
I mean, Alan Jackson was certainly doing drums and rock and roll guitars.
I suspect were he here to defend himself, he would say that summertime blues is closer to country music than a lot of what's coming out in the 90s.
Probably also fair. I mean, and Alan Jackson was a big time supporter of older acts. Very famously, he gives up his spot performing on the CMAs to George Jones.
He comes out with an album, too, and I don't remember what it's called, but it's just covers of, I think it's called like Under the Influence or something like that. It's just covers of his favorite older country songs.
So I really don't mean to cast aspersions on Alan Jackson. He's not the problem. And yet, I mean, he's doing songs that sound like what he's criticizing here.
Sure.
To me.
It is interesting, though. I mean, even as we've done all these episodes, even there's like kind of vast stylistic changes decade to decade. Right. And so if you listen to country music in the 60s, the Nashville sound sort of country music, I mean, it definitely sounds produced and unlike Hank Williams, right? But we still recognize it as country music, having gone under some kind of variation. And I do think, though, by the end of the 90s, it becomes a thing where it's morphed into something totally different. Like I do think that the distinction is different. When the snack shack, the cafeteria where I work, when I go in there, they're always having contemporary country music on the radio. Like, it's very got this twang to it, but it is in no way recognizable as country music other than the kind of tenor, like the accent, right? And so it is a different genre. And I think that there is a point that they're making that is true. At that moment especially, there is a radical break with tradition, I think.
I do wonder how much of this is just a question of distance, though. So if we had been living in the 60s, would we have been saying, oh, this Nashville sound stuff, it might as well be, maybe not Motown, but whatever the pop equivalent, or the equivalent of pop music was in the 60s. It all sounds the same. This isn't Hank Williams, right? This is just rock and roll being played by guys in hats, or nudie suits, I guess, in the 60s, right? And 40 years from now, people look back at the 90s and say, oh, yeah, that hat country, that was real country. But what's happening now, they might as well just be playing rap.
No reason to wait that long. I mean, when you listen to 90s country music, don't you feel like it's closer to real country music than, Old Town Road?
I mean, is Old Town Road supposed to be country? When I edited that into the previous episode, I assumed this was some non-country song that involved Billy Ray Cyrus for some reason.
I actually don't know. I thought it was a pop song that was designed to cross back over into country music. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
One country music single of last year before that was a song by the Chainsmokers.
I have no idea who that is.
Never heard of that.
Well, they're like an electro pop group, but they brought in some country music vocalist to sing. So anyway, I think, Old Town Road is what passes for country music these days. Mm. It's all crossover.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, that's the question. I'm sympathetic to the argument of that song. But I also recognize that, as we've talked about, these genre distinctions are notoriously squishy, and you're right, Coyle. I think with distance, anything sounds more traditional, right? When I listen to country music from the 2000s, it doesn't sound any more like country music to me now than it did then. Like, you know what I'm saying? And so, when I listen to Tim McGraw in the 2000s, for example, it still doesn't sound like country music to me. It sounds like pop when he did the cover of Ryan Adams' song, like we talked about, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I do feel like there was, and someone who visited Nashville when I was a kid, that downtown is entire, the landscape is entirely different. Like I was just there a few years ago now, for 5 or 6 years ago, I don't know. The downtown where all that scene takes place is entirely different. And so I think there is, it's much more metropolitan and it's much more like polished, right? And so I think that works its way into the sound. And I think there is a radical difference between Nashville in the 90s and Nashville post 90s.
It's not full of porno theaters like in the good old days.
I don't remember the porno theaters. Me and my parents didn't. I just remember, like, I don't know. It was not tailored towards hipness. It was tailored towards, I guess it was what I imagine Branson to be like, although I haven't been to Branson, so I don't know.
If Branson survives the coronavirus, you should absolutely go to Branson.
I need to. I really do want to go so bad.
How far are you from Branson, Coyle? Maybe you could hold some sort of City of Man listener meetup at Charlie Pride Theater.
I'm about an hour from Branson, so where on earth were we going with that?
Nashville's.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm probably not the person to judge here either, because I stopped listening to contemporary country music in the early 2000s. So maybe the 90s stuff just sounds country to me because it's what I was listening to. And when I stopped, I was no longer following that kind of evolution of the music. So country music does maybe in my mind kind of stop in the early 2000s. And after that, when I try to jump back in, I'm like, well, this doesn't sound like Alan Jackson or Tim McGraw or Mark Chestnut or, you know, Joe Diffie or whoever. This sounds like I don't even know what, because I don't listen to the pop station either.
For me, I can remember the moment where I like stopped recognizing it in the 90s. This sort of, I guess, supergroup called the Tractors.
Oh, yeah.
Were big.
I don't know.
Baby Likes to Rock It.
yeah, yeah. And I'm like, this is where I'm done. And I stopped listening. And that's the moment when I didn't. So you can almost mark the time when I didn't pay any more attention.
Yeah, I didn't stop listening on purpose. It was just I went to college and I wasn't spending 14 hours a day in the summer driving a tractor. I mean, that it really was a practical, I am no longer doing that. I'm now doing this academic stuff. So
yeah,
maybe I would be more sympathetic to more contemporary music if I hadn't stopped doing that. Although, to be fair, I'm also talking to two guys who prefer alt country to mainstream country. So that's also probably not the best view of the industry. Or it is the best view of the industry, and the industry is wrong. You know, we could go either way.
And it is true that a lot of the folks that we would call traditional find a better home in Americana.
Right.
And so I think like people like Mary Chapin Carpenter and Vince Gill, right? I think, yeah.
Right. Well, anything else to say about anything we've covered today? Otherwise, we're coming up on 2 hours and should probably call it.
I can't believe we had that much to say about this decade.
You know, going into this, I was ready to do a lot of hating on 90s country. And then as I was listening through some of this, I was like, you know, this is actually both because of the nostalgia of, oh, yeah, I remember listening to this on the radio, and some of it's good. Like, Alan Jackson is an excellent performer. Travis Tritt is a fantastic performer. I think he is massively underrated, both as a singer and as a guitarist. I mean, I think you could pick randomly anyone we talked about today and go and listen to their albums and come away saying this is good music. If you like country music, this is good, solid music. Maybe not Aaron Tippin and maybe not maybe not Tim McGraw, but any of the rest of them. Yeah, maybe I need to go back and rethink my judgment of 90s country. And that's probably a good place for us to call it, since this episode's already long enough that it'll probably turn into two. Thanks so much, guys, for coming on the show. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting ChristianHumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God.
The end of a 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost.